The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Gary Breen's on the line. Evening, Gary.
Good evening, Joe.
So, disappointing news. This guy is just going to be such a loss to Irish football.
Yeah, listen, in terms of his ability and what he could potentially bring to our team, our squad, yeah, of course it is. In isolation, if you look at it like that, it's a massive loss. But ultimately, he's proved he's not Irish, so I've been quite consistent on this. I just concentrate on the Irish players who want to play for Ireland, and we just move forward.
Do we have any reason to feel used and abused?
I think the shirt, the green jersey, should never be auditioned. I don't think anyone should wear it to see if they like it and then try something else. I don't believe in that for one moment. I don't believe any international shirt should be. I've told you before, Joe, I think the decision should be made when you sign your professional contract at 18. I know at 18, as we all were, you're not privy to what is happening around you, but you certainly know what country you're from. I don't care about that. And I know that a lot's been said that asking questions to me, I'm similar upbringing him in London, but it isn't. I heard Dan saying, me growing up in Camden Town in the 70s is totally different to being brought up in London now to a second generation of Irish people as such, and the fact that he's his grandparent. Mm. So I have learned to, as I heard you say, walk in his shoes for a bit and try to understand. And I do appreciate in terms of the decision to be made, it's a difficult one. But I won't ever go away from the fact that this decision should have been made before he ever wore the senior jersey. And it makes a mockery of the fact that we've allowed him to play under our underage groups. And I think ultimately my feeling in terms of being hoodwinked a little bit was because I bought into everything he said. When he first came and trained with a senior team down in Cork, I listened to how eloquent he was, how much he made me believe it meant to him to play for Ireland, and I believed every word of it. I don't believe it, even now looking back, that he was lying at that stage, but I have issues really with not just the decision, but his statement. The very fact he says things like, it was not a decision that I expected I would have to make. Well, what do you mean? Did you not think that you may well come into the radar of the English squad? And as a result, if you didn't believe that, well, I'll take Ireland as the next best option. I don't understand the statement that I know a lot of people have grabbed onto now, that as a proud Englishman, well, when's this suddenly come about? In the last couple of months, you didn't seem to be a proud Englishman when you were singing the national anthem. So
can
I
you
do
not
have
be
issues
a proud
with
Englishman,
it. But listen, ultimately,
can you not be a proud Englishman and a proud Irishman?
Well, I'm sure you can in terms of his upbringing. He said that. But I think you have to make a decision based on who you believe. Now, he said he's pulled on that Ireland shirt. And ultimately, he's done nothing wrong in terms of the rules. But this is essentially what is the problem. That rule has to change.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a career move in national football. I've said this so many times that it should be our best against your best. And he's not alone. You know, like the England FA have had the scenario with Wilfried Zaha, who come up through their ranks and then declared for the Ivory Coast. So it will happen again with us. It will happen for other teams. But I just want to show, I want to get away from that. I want that rule to be changed, that you declare who you play for at 18 and it can't be changed.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the line that jumped out at you did jump out at me as well. He never thought it was a decision he'd have to make. It does really suggest that his career exploded in a way he wasn't fully expecting, and the attention of England came when he wasn't fully expecting it.
But so often, Joe, he used to say when it was muted to him before about him not like playing that competitive game, that there's no decision to make. He kept saying that quote, there's no decision to make. Mm. So what did he ultimately mean by that is the very fact that, well, England have not even come in for me, so there is no decision to make. But when they did come in, hold on a minute. And I get frustrated about that because he's not alone. You hear John Aldridge talking about the fact he played for Ireland because England hadn't come for him yet. Ray out and say, well, listen, I didn't have a decision to make because Scotland didn't come looking for me yet. And that that really, really frustrates me. And even John Aldridge has said, well, listen, what did we expect? His hero, John Terry, it was more than likely he was going to declare for his country of his birth. Well, my hero growing up was Tony Adams in terms of club football. Paul McGrath's my hero, of course, in terms of the national team. But Tony Adams come knocking on my door and said, play for England, it would have made a blind bit of difference.
Yeah, but that is the uneasy situation we find ourselves in. You know, Andy Townsend was supporting England at Euro 88.
Yeah, well, he's not alone. And I always used to ask that to lads who came into the squad of my generation, my age, the likes of McAteer, Matt Holland. Who were you supporting in 88? Who were you cheering for? And more often than not, they were saying England. And it does leave a bit of a bad taste in your mouth.
Mm. Gary, we had spoken about this, you know, consistently, you know, on the show here, and I think at one point we spoke about the delay and how long it had taken. I think we spoke about, did you believe that it meant his dilemma was more real, that it was quite sincere? I mean, looking at it now, what do you think about the amount of time it took him to reach this decision? How do you view that?
Well, I don't see it as a case of it's took him this length of time. I just think it's been a case of him, he's took longer time to announce the decision. I don't think he made the decision yesterday. Not for one moment do I believe that. I think that decision was made pretty early on, because Gareth Southgate's been really calm and collected. He said, listen, you know, we've made an approach and that's it. Never said anything other than that. So he must have got a sense of such. And even the fact, Dan, that, you know, we sent him Robbie Keane to go and talk to him. What are we doing that for? Well, that's a complete nonsense, isn't it? As if Robbie Keane is our greatest ever Ireland player, is going to change his mind. Fundamentally, that's the problem. That he shouldn't have had his mind changed. He shouldn't need persuading as such. It should be a case that when I watch that Ireland team, and I may be romantic in this point of view, but I want to watch that Ireland team knowing that every one of those players who's pulled on a jersey, I've dreamt about that since they were a kid, like you did, like Joe did, like I did. Anyone who's playing football as a kid was dreaming of playing for Ireland. I want it to be like that. Now, listen, I may well be naive, but I never see it as anything other than a PR stunt sending Robbie Keane to go and talk to him with Mick. Mick has been quite bold, hasn't he, in his statement, saying, well, listen, I wish him all the best. We move forward. It's been quite short, to the point, Mick's statement. And ultimately, that's because of the reason, because he's going to be playing by the same rules. He's caught in Nathan Redmond, who's synonymous with the England underage groups. So it's not a case of Mick can then throw his arms up in the air and say, oh, it's wrong, because he's going to do exactly the same, chase other players. And listen, it's not up to Mick. It's not whether or not it's his belief or not. It's his remit as the Ireland manager to, under the current rules, is to try and find the best players available to him who, in inverted brackets, qualify. Whether or not they're Irish, but they qualify. So he has to do that, but I just don't like it. And it never will sit well with me.
Yeah, I mean, Gary, do you believe going forward that the FAI, Irish football, they need to change, alter our mindset in terms of how we view these rules? I mean, because we know that there's recruitment, there's a degree of poaching, there's a degree of competition, that there'll be 15, 16, 17-year-old lads with an Irish background that will be approached, even though we know there's a possibility that this might happen. I mean, would you like to see that policy changed in any way, or is it just an inevitable consequence of...
Well,
of
ultimately, Dan, that won't change, because they have a remit, those guys who've got to go and source the players to do what they can under the current rules, like every other national team will be doing. But I don't like it. I hope that rule does change. I don't think it will do, because it's so fluid now in terms of people representing different countries. The world seems to be much more than it ever was. And obviously England's so cosmopolitan in terms of the different nationalities. But there is a thought process here. You'll hear it a lot in the English press, that they believe the FAI and all our scouts hunt down these young players and grab them before anyone else can get hold of them. And that doesn't sit right as such. But it's difficult. It is such a difficult scenario. And people may argue about double standards. And I was listening to Keith Andrews and Kevin Kilbane talk about this, not today, but when it was initially broke before. And Keith Andrews knew exactly that Mark Noble, he knew his background, didn't he? Because he made it his business to know, because Mark Noble, if he did declare for Ireland, could potentially take his place. Mm. But then he counted it by saying, when he was coaching for the underage groups, he said, how would we know the background of these players and whether or not they wanted to? To which I would be saying, well, why don't you know that? That's exactly what you should know. Ask these players it. But it didn't suit him. It suited them to have those players who potentially were English, but who could represent us to our benefit. So, you know, it's very difficult in terms of people throwing accusations here or there, because I suppose everyone is guilty of it.
So your answer to Dan there was, well, this policy of hoovering up any 15 or 16-year-olds who might have Irish heritage is not going to change because the rule is not going to change. Let's assume for a second the rule never changes. Would you like to see a change in FAI policy? These people are only out there recruiting these teenagers because it's FAI policy. Should that change?
Well, it's a difficult one. It is. Bearing in mind what happens with the North as well, I know that's in isolation is a very, very different topic as such, in terms of Michael O'Neill saying that we took players off of them, blah, 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 and then players declaring for us and then going back to them. I don't know. It's a difficult one, because ultimately there'll be a lot of supporters who will say, that's part of your job. Go and find these players, and then you're going to have to just hope and pray that the dice fall your way as such. in my romantic view of everyone being dreaming of playing for Ireland and then going all the way through to play for the senior team, maybe I am being naive, but I want to protect what is so special about international football, our best against your best. But it's not just soccer, is it, or football? Look at rugby, for God's sake. I mean, you see some of the players playing for the England rugby team, the Ireland rugby, Scotland and stuff, and listen, I keep throwing this one up there. Owen Morgan, captain of England cricket team. It's a nonsense.
Yeah. I mean, the sad reality is you are watching an Irish team now and there are players in that team, and if England had come in for them, they would, I mean, they couldn't be out the door quick enough.
The underage groups for England.
Yeah. But like, we are watching so many players and that will continue, and if England came for them, they would be out the door. It's probably one of the reasons it really rankles with people, is because deep down we know this.
Well, of course, because it means so much to us, the green jersey. We don't want people to take advantage of it as such, but I don't know. I have real difficulty with it. And obviously the likes of me and Kev, who brought up in England as such, to our Irish parents, we're obviously the ones who are always like thrown out there and such. But the reality is we're very different to those. I mean, I've got no aunties and uncles who are English. They're all Irish. I don't have any family who are English and such. So it's a very different thing. And Joe, you've been consistent. You've always said that at 18, you don't know your own mind. And I respect you for saying that, but at 18, I knew what country I felt I was from. See, even listening to this Cockney accent as such.
Yeah, no, I know. And look, for you and for Kev in particular, it was such a straightforward decision. It's very straightforward for me. Both my parents are Ireland. I think Declan Rice, if he was born in England, feels more English than he does Irish, but had a genuine affinity to Ireland, and then that was probably accentuated because he played with the Irish setup and he saw what it meant to his dad. And I think they were genuine feelings.
Ultimately, looking back on your Ireland career, it's a dream come true. But the fulfillment you get as a player for making your mum and dad proud, your nan and your granddad, it's an amazing feeling. It really is. And like, you look at them. And when you're standing there with the national anthem, all those memories of you as a kid kicking ball with them and them saying, you play for Ireland soon one day, you know, blah, 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 it all comes flooding back to you. It shouldn't do, because you're concentrating on the game. But it's amazing. I'd love to be able to have the vocabulary to explain how those moments flash into your head then. And you're right. I don't doubt that he doesn't have that affiliation to Ireland, but the wording even of that statement to say, I'm a proud Englishman and I have an affiliation to Ireland with my grandparents. You weren't saying any of that initially, was he? It's great to play for Ireland, got a great affiliation for him.
There's no doubt he probably went a bit
as
far.
As a teenager and even at 28, after the World Cup, decisions I made to go to West Ham and stuff. West Ham, brilliant club, but the wrong decision at the time. So I understand that. International football is not a career choice. You have an opportunity in club football to play anywhere in the world now and play for whoever you want. But that shouldn't be the same for international football. You shouldn't wear a jersey on and think, it was nice, but maybe I'll go and see what that one's like over there.
You're an idealist in a very pragmatic world, I'm afraid, Gary Breen.
Yeah, listen, I probably am very much alone in terms of my thought process in terms of that, and I understand it, but I won't change.
No, like, you're right. You know, I agree with everything you've said. Everything you've said is how
But you are more pragmatic than me, and you're more articulate than me. But when you see the statement, what do you feel? What do you feel when you read that statement? I'm a proud Englishman.
Yeah, I thought it was a fair enough statement, actually. I did.
Really?
Yeah.
But where was that belief when he was wearing the jersey and singing the national anthem?
See, I also felt he was a proud Englishman then as well. I felt he was a proud Englishman and a proud Irishman. I think he was both.
He didn't say he was a proud Irishman, did he? He said he's got an affiliation to Ireland. There's a difference.
Yeah, I'd have to reread that part. So he said what I...
I think the statement was... I mean, see, I think the statement was very well crafted. And
it's not
possibly
even written,
not written by him.
No,
it's not. So, I mean, I don't know about the statement. I mean, obviously he has to sign off on it.
Yeah, do you know what I'd like, Gary, actually? And I'd love him to have the balls to do it, is to just... sit down with journalist, somebody trust,
and just talk honestly. A lot of people, because I think he's articulate. I like the way he talks. I like the way he conducts himself as a modern-day footballer as well, where his idealism is about playing football. And he says quotes like, the best player in the world won't beat the most hard-working. I bought into all that, and that won't change, because I'll look at him, and there's no doubt in my mind he's going to play for an elite-level club in the Premier League. I believe that. I do, and I think he'll make a massive difference to the England team because the learning curve that he'll get from being a teenager now suggests that the level he's going to get to is going to be of the highest quality, which is fantastic. And ultimately, there's a bit of disappointment that he's not doing an Ireland shirt, but it's not as big as people think. I don't go, oh, damn it. I literally look at him like I do Harry Kane and think, yeah, but he's not Irish, is he? But if he was Irish, it would have been good, but he's not. Who is Irish?
Yeah. Listen, great to get you on. That's really thoughtful. It's good to kind of tease this stuff out. We'll talk to you again sometime.
Yeah, you got me on toast there, didn't you? Cheers.
No, I do not. I do not. Thanks a million. Bye-bye.
Good luck, Gary
Breen there.
See you, guys.
We'll take a short break.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I have sympathy, listeners, for the plight of a print man like Dan McDonald. He is typing furiously alongside me. Deadline fast approaching. It's been a big day. Declan Rice has made sure of that, Dan. And you are under pressure.
Yeah, getting there. Getting there, but you know, there's words to be written. There's other stuff going on in the world as well. So, you know, well, I mean, there is. Factually, there is other things going on in the world, but I mean, in our world, I suppose this is the main topic. But
how many pages of Declan Rice coverage can I look forward to tomorrow when I open my Irish Independent?
I'm trying to figure
out.
Two dozen, a bit strong. I'd say 4 to 5 anyway, by the looks of it. So, I wouldn't obviously just be doing everything on it, so I see there's other stuff in there. So, I mean, you know, there's, I mean, just timing and everything, like a new League of Ireland season coming on Friday, people would have had pieces probably ready to go related to that. In fact, I know for a fact that, you know, they would have, and then all of a sudden, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you just have to sort of reshape everything to deal with what is a massive story. Now, in a way, I have to admit, like we talked about it earlier on, I sort of feel a bit of relief as well as everything too, that it's also finally over, because it was hanging over us for a long period of time. Like, hugely disappointed with how it's ended and that he won't play for Ireland, and that's a massive blow. But it was sort of there the whole time. In fact, any coverage of Mick McCarthy's Ireland to date, that's been there. It was a question when he was appointed, you know, it was a question at his press conference, it was the first question when he was over last month for the soccer writers' dinner. Okay, it's not what we wanted, but there's a sense of okay, finality now at last. And it's like, okay, let's get on with it. But it still leaves a sort of a sour taste to some degree, and I assume that pain will linger for some time.
Meanwhile, at Wembley, Spurs 1, Dortmund 0. That is the big news from the last 2-3 minutes or so. Who else but Son? He's having quite the season. 16 goals this season. He's freshly back from the Asian Cup, and he's scored 3 goals, now 4, I think, since his return. He's having a remarkable season, and it was a really, really good goal as well. The story of the first half is that Dortmund were on top. They had the better chances. Jadon Sancho was exceptionally good. My first time really seeing him in 90 minutes, watching him closely like this, or 45 minutes, and he was the star of the first half. He's the real deal. And there was talk that maybe Vertonghen, who is playing wing-back for Spurs this evening, left wing-back, there was talk maybe he'll drop back and give a dig out to the back three, because really Sancho was getting in on them, and Dortmund were creating some chances. And Vertonghen stayed high, and honestly, he put in just a fantastic cross for Son. Son was, he was next to Zagato, I think. He was in front of him, and then he checked back behind him, and Vertonghen just curled the ball into an area, and Son met it with, there was a touch of heel about it, but it was a brilliant volley, first time into the corner.
He's really like a top five Premier League player now, is he? Or he's certainly knocking on that door, big time.
As in top five players in the league?
He's getting there. Whew. He's moving up that list. I mean, okay.
We love the guy, but he's top 10 maybe.
Well, you're talking, okay, I know the obvious ones. You can go to De Bruyne and Hazard and Aguero. Okay, but he's just becoming an elite player. You know, he's becoming hugely important to Spurs. Like, you know, Harry Kane is Eriksen, Dele Alli, but he's as important as those players, really. I mean, we've seen that when
16 goals,
the fear over him going away. Yeah. I mean, certainly, he's probably the shout for the best Asian player there ever has been in the Premier League. I mean, Park Ji-sung is the obvious one that springs to mind. But he's sort of got to a level now that's, I mean, when you consider the sort of fuss that accompanied Kagawa and certain other recruits, you know, from that neck of the woods. And there's obviously massive like commercial value because of the markets and stuff. And but he is the real deal.
Yeah.
You know, he's the real deal player.
No, he really is. Heung-min Son, 26 years of age. He's at a really good age now. And he's been great all season. It's funny, on COCOM there, Robbie Savage on BT was saying, is he the most underrated player in the Premier League? He's not anymore.
He's getting to that stage where he's moving beyond underrated to just...
Isn't that the way Paul Scholes was underrated for a while?
Yeah.
Not. Everyone knows how good he is. He's brilliant. He's great. Full of energy, full of running. So Spurs 1-0. The feeling, I watched a bit of the BT halftime. The feeling in the studio there was that with Dele Alli and Harry Kane expected back in 3 weeks' time for the second leg, that nil-all would be absolutely fine for Spurs, and maybe they were playing defensively with nil-all in mind, you know. Nil-all is often a bad result for the away team when they go back home because it's very dangerous. You can see the goal, you're in big trouble. So if Spurs can hang on here for 1-0,
yeah, they've got the skills to score away. You know, they have a style which lends itself to scoring away, as you say. So, yeah, it's a pretty good situation to be in. But, I mean, there's 35 minutes left to go
in
this game.
So. VAR ruled out the only goal of the game in Amsterdam. Ajax did lead Real Madrid for a few precious moments, but then VAR kicked in. It was hard to tell, actually, if it's for obstruction or for offside. But regardless, Ajax's goal was ruled out just before the break, so it's nil all at half time. Meanwhile, Kenny Cunningham standing by. Hello, sir.
Evening, lads.
All well?
All good. All good, Joe, as always.
Okay, so we've had Gary Breen on the show already and talked a little bit about Declan Rice, so we don't have to spend ages on it, but former Republic of Ireland captain, it would be good to get your take on how the whole thing has played out.
Yeah, I haven't heard too much of it today. Obviously, I heard the news, but I didn't hear any comments attributed to Declan. It wasn't a huge surprise, Joe, in all honesty. I wouldn't say I was waiting on tender hooks either, but it didn't come as a surprise.
Yeah. Do you feel like we've been mistreated in any way by Declan Rice?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I had the opportunity to work with Declan on the under-19s, only for a short period of time, so I saw firsthand in terms of how he interacted with the players in the under-19 setup, in terms of how he felt being part of the international setup at underage level, what the jersey kind of meant to him. And it came across as 100% genuine to me. He absolutely loved the environment, loved his teammates, was very proud playing for Ireland and proud of his Ireland heritage, although English-born. Obviously had roots in Ireland and was very proud of him. When the opportunity presented itself to play on the right level, he took it. Obviously, his circumstances have changed. He found himself with a big decision to make some time ago to take the next step forward on the international stage, senior international, or to take a step back and weigh up his options. And that's what he decided to do. It's not an easy one to speak about. I've given this one really kind of dwelt over this over the past kind of years, not just Declan. Like, very easy for me to come on really radio and kind of trash Declan to a large extent. Is that we don't need him. Who the hell does he think he is? But I can't put myself in Declan Rice's shoes. I genuinely think Declan's English born. I'm not particularly sure there was a particularly strong Irish element to his upbringing in terms of the Irish community where he grew up. I think the association with Ireland was his grandparents, I think. But he would have been growing up English friends and probably considered himself English. And at the same time, very proud of his Irish heritage. And I think he can have both. I don't think it has to be one or the other, Joe. You know, he can consider himself English but be very proud, whether it's a parent or a grandparent, of that association with Ireland. So I don't bemoan the fact that he's chosen to play for England. And I genuinely wish him well. He's a very talented player. He's made his decision. And good luck to him.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with a lot of that, to be honest. I suppose, to play devil's advocate for a moment, the one area you could say we'd be a bit entitled to be disappointed with is that he let it go so far, that he played 3 games for Ireland, that he sung the national anthem, that he kissed the badge, that he... You know, he certainly. If you take his comments at face value, they can, they don't sit well now. But it depends how much you're going to hold an 18, 19-year-old to account.
Yeah, and I don't think that was that's my point, I suppose, Joe. I don't think that was the front. Those pictures we saw, Declan when he played those games at senior international level, albeit friendly games. I don't think that was put on. It was kind of forced. He was kind of wearing a mask. I think they were kind of genuine feelings when he spoke after the game. after those games, and he spoke about his experiences within the squad, how he's enjoying it. That came across as pretty genuine to me. But things change very quickly. And from a footballing perspective, things have changed very quickly for Declan in a pretty short period of time in terms of the standing of the game and the big strides that he's made forward in a very short period of time. And clearly he's had his head turned, the phone's rung, he's had a conversation with Gareth Southgate. Yeah. Gareth Southgate, and it's made him think. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's very difficult to put myself in that situation. I was never in that kind of situation. So I'm a little bit reluctant to be overly critical of Declan. But I think you're right. My opinion on this is I don't like the situation. You play international friendlies of sorts, but, you know, we can still jump. For me, natural cut-off point certainly is under 21 level. UK, you play competitive under 21. Football for a country, for me, that's it. You've made your colours to the mast. Then, although that said, Joe, the talk of kind of, I heard this talk a little bit in terms of Martin missed the boat there. He should have given him, you know, he should have forced and given him the jersey. You kind of tied him in, you know, kind of, you know, forced him into it, almost into a career with Ireland, almost against his will. Yeah. I mean, I'd never subscribe to that. I mean, there's so many players who would walk over broken glass to play a minute of a game in an international jersey. So I'd never force anybody or push anybody into a situation where they're actually, you know, forced into an allegiance to a country. So I don't buy into that one either. So I am very sympathetic in terms of the arguments for other people. I understand the kind of passion there, the disappointment, and the anger in some respects. I can understand it. But kind of on reflection of the past couple of years, I suppose, I wouldn't say I've changed my opinion on this, but I've kind of come to look at it from a slightly different angle. Particularly, I was fortunate enough, as I said, just to have a bit of an association with young Flynn Whelan, and that for a short period of time. Probably gave me a little bit of a kind of perspective, a little bit of a window into this particular situation. So, yeah, so for me, I don't cry over it. It's done. He's made his decision, and we move on. It's as simple as that. For me, there's a lot of good things to look forward to. I'm excited about the qualifying games coming up next month. I can't wait, to be honest with you. I think there's some really good stories there developing. So very quickly for me, the talk of Declan Rice will disappear.
Yeah, Kenny, I mean, you touched on it there. You have the insight from working in the international setup, and I think this is a difficult one. But do you think the FAI in any way should change how they think about the policy of bringing players in at under 17, under 18, under 19 level? Like, for example, there's a guy, Joe Hodge, played for Ireland under 17s today, who's played for England and Ireland in the last 6 months. Now, they are the rules. People know the rules. Yeah. But is there a discussion to be had about how, you know, the FAI approach this as an association with players?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Dan, to be honest with you, because there'll always be players. I played a number of players, kind of English-born players with that kind of Irish heritage, consider themselves Irish for a start. They're very personal things, very private things. You can never tell somebody from me what nationality they are. That's a very personal thing. They can only tell you. But I think you're right in terms of if there's a player English-born with Irish parentage who has a real passion and desire to play for Ireland, absolutely. Let's give them the opportunity. If we're convinced that's the case, you have that kind of commitment. But for me, if I'm taking your point correctly, we almost have to focus a little bit more, kind of redirect our focus in terms of players born and developed in this country, and just retarget the focus on those players a little bit, and maybe show those players a little bit maybe more love than we have done previously. Because I'm sure there must be players playing their trade school by football in Ireland, even League of Ireland level, and they pick up the paper and they hear of Ireland trailing desperately, hunting around the continent for players, any kind of connection, tenuous as may be, with the international setup, looking to bring these type of players in. And that must be very, I wouldn't say it's an insult to those players, it must be a little bit disheartening for those players to read those type of stories and feel as if maybe the association is kind of looking elsewhere, not looking more so where it should. The players here, you know, born in this country, developed and with a born and passion to play at the highest international level for their country. And those are the players we should be assisting and helping and as much as we can in terms of their development as players while they're in this country, and even if they take the next step forward abroad or onto the continent.
Yeah. See, I wonder to what extent there's an attitude of, well, we'll always have those players. You know, they'll be there, they'll be waiting for us. Let's go out and use underage international football to attract the James McCarthys of the world and get them involved. And then we have the best of both worlds. You know, there's certainly a cold pragmatism to it as well, I think, is the truth.
Yeah, no, yeah, I understand what you're saying, Alway. And like I said, I'm not suggesting whether it's English-born, Scottish-born, wherever it is. For me, if there's a real commitment on behalf of the player, a real desire to play the jersey, if those connections are strong, if that there's a clear heritage there and a real determination for the player to go, he wants to go and play, that's absolutely fine. But I think you're right, Joe. I think if players... Irish born, coming through the systems, and get a bit of a sense of that, what you're talking about, that have really been taken for granted a little bit. We won't really have to work too hard with these players. But we should be working hard with these players, because we've got some outstanding young talent in this country, always have, playing at all different levels, schoolboy, amateur, League of Ireland, who need a little bit more love for me. And when I say a little bit more love, that's what I'm talking about. Need to be recognised. Need to be helped, need to be developed, assisted from a coaching perspective on a load of different levels, and helped as much as we can. That's the kind of love that I'm taking about, to develop and make them even better players. Because if we make them better players and they arrive at a level, a football level, technical level, whatever you want to call it, that they're ready to make that step to the senior international team, we'll never have to worry about these players jumping ship at the last minute. We'll never have to worry about it, because it won't even be an option, won't even be a decision for these players to make, because they'll be absolutely 100% committed to the cause for the very reasons that I've spoken about. So, yeah, not one or the other for me, Joe, but just a little bit more of a focus for me in terms of what we've got here already, and to appreciate it a little bit more, and to help it develop and blossom a little bit better.
Yeah, because it's funny, it's just timely. Sean Maguire's got his first goal of the season for Preston just now. A player at 21's level who, you could argue, was actually didn't play that much and was behind lads who at times, you know, had been parachuted in. So it's funny. But Kenny, so Declan Rice is gone now, and you say that there's reasons to be optimistic. And maybe some people had sort of mentally written Declan Rice out of the picture, but it was still lingering in the background that he could come in and be this central figure. But now that he is gone, what makes you optimistic? What can we do in that area of the pitch, and where is the hope and the optimism? I mean, Alan Brown's doing well at Preston, for example, different type of player, I know, but where is the optimism for what we can do in that area of pressing ahead now?
Well, I think the optimism is in terms of where we're starting from, Nick coming in. I think it's a pretty low bar. That's not to be too... That's not a criticism aimed at Martin or an Inter, but it was a real struggle for us in terms of confidence, quality of football, which we were producing towards the tail end of Martin's tenure there. It was a really tough watch. So I'm interested in terms of tactical, how Mick sees it going forward in terms of the setup of the team. You mentioned Sean Maguire there, Robinson as well, from Preston. James McCarthy. Now, I mentioned James McCarthy's name. I imagine a couple of people listening to this will be yawning. Oh, here we go, James McCarthy. Don't underestimate the qualities that young player possesses. He's back fit now. He needs to get games under his belt, but that lad can still be a key player for us in that central area of the pitch. Jeff Hendricks, for me, Robbie Brady, there's still huge potential there. Quality, football and quality to be tapped into. We've got to get more out of those players. And if we can do it, I think we'll see a big improvement in terms of performances. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to. I could individually mention the likes of Mac Dockett as well, how Mick's potentially thinking of integrating him into the team, how the tactical setup, what will Mick, we go to back four, an orthodox 4-4-2, did he see a little bit differently, maybe with a narrow midfield three, a bit of natural width in the team, maybe deviate away a little bit from a kind of diamond formation, which Martin persisted for quite a bit, from a very narrow midfield, sacrificing that natural width in the team, which for me, I always like to see us play with those natural wingers, kind of combining with full-backs down the flanks. So I think it's always been a big asset for us. I think we're good at it, we enjoy it, and I think we've had a certain amount of success with it. So I'd be interested to see if maybe Mick leans back towards a tactical setup that incorporates more of a natural width into the team. So all those type of things for me make me excited. I can't wait for the games to come around. I'm expecting Mick to have him to make an impression very quickly with the squad when he joins up. It's not ideal for Mick. He could have had a year's preparation with this team. Unfortunately, he's going to have about 6 days. But I think the fixes have been coined for us, the first two fixes. It's exactly the teams that we wanted to play, considering the relatively small amount of time Mick will have with the players in terms of the build-up. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking to improvement in performance in terms of body language of the players, a little bit of confidence returning to the team, and 6 points from those two games. If we can do that, we're up and running for me, and kind of the whole dynamic begins to change a little bit.
Kenny, great stuff. Before we let you go, by the way, Dan's hot take this evening has been shot down by Peter in Sandyford.
Hot take. Yeah.
So we watched Son score his goal there for Spurs, and Dan said, do you know what? I think he's one in the top five players. Top five players, maybe, getting there in the Premier League. Peter in Sandyford said top five in Spurs, maybe. And I was just thinking, he didn't even make Kenny Cunningham's team of the year, and he's in your top five.
He did get a mention. No, fair play to Dan. He did get a mention. I think he was up there against Hazard, wasn't it, in Sané on that left wing. But I did give him a mention. He's had an absolute wonderful season.
He's not top five.
I keep thinking of different players every time. I'm
top five.
I forgot about Liverpool. But he's up there, end of year award considerations.
Top five in London, maybe.
Okay, in terms of the context of this season, top five this season. He's had a better season than some of the players.
I'm not sure about the top five. I've got to cut you down a little bit here, Dan. The best top five players. For me, that's a difficult one. Once you start factoring in defenders, bringing defenders, if you analyse him in terms of his position on the pitch, probably generally speaking as one of those wide of a three, and you match him up against the likes of Hazard, Sterling, those type of players, Salah, who people will be picking in those positions, I think that's where you have to stand up and make your argument for him. But you're right, I think there is a really strong argument for him in terms of his stats. You look at his numbers, assists, goals, and not just that, Dan, just in terms of quality performance, low maintenance players as well. Strikes one of those players. Good trainer, no problem with the manager whatsoever, popular with his teammates, good personality as well. Kind of really, you get enough of them inside your squad and you're going places.
See, if you read between the lines there, Dan, he's shot you down in the nicest possible way. Shut them down, but then pick them up.
And dust them down.
Ah, oh, dear, beautifully done. That's the captain in you. You're a leader, bringing everyone with you.
Be a very kind assassin, you know. Let you phone your family first.
That's why 1,000 cuts. Yeah.
Listen, we'll let you go. Thanks, Emil.
Nice one. Cheers, lads.
All right, See you. Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
So still Spurs 1, Dortmund 0, and Karim Benzema has scored for Real Madrid. So they're 1-0 up against Ajax this evening, 73 minutes on the clock. You may have heard over the last few weeks at various points we've had Tom Dunn in speaking to us brilliantly about his ordeal and his heart operation of late. And we had Paul Keoghan in yesterday, who was brilliant, the Paralympian, talking about suffering a stroke and how it impacted on his life. It all ties in with the Irish Heart Foundation's Show Some Heart campaign, which you can support, and we would encourage you to do so. By going to irishheart.ie/donate. Poor Dan, says Colin. Spinning plates in the show, firing out hot takes, typing up copy, and then Joe acquaints him with the underside of the bus in front of Kenny. Nightmare.
Yeah, don't embarrass me in front of Kenny again.
I know.
Joe, that's unbelievably, you know, just because I'm not in a position to double down on my hot take that I instantly regretted the minute I said it. I mean, I want to sort of go back. You see, this is the difference between radio and writing. I would just go back and like correct that. Mm-hmm. If I got a bit of derision and be like, well, actually, I meant top five this season.
Yeah.
Not in actuality, like the current top five players in the Premier League. No, but still.
You put it on the record.
I said it. So I should just double down and just ignore all evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, well, that's been done before.
But he should be on the shortlist at the end of the year for the Player of the Year award, okay. in my view.
So Ole Gunnar Solskjaer then. It was all going so well. 11 games, 10 wins, 1 draw. Incredible momentum. There was a sense of invincibility about Manchester United yesterday. Pat Nevin, who I trust above all others, made Manchester United favourites for the game last night. And, you know, first half it wasn't so bad. It was relatively even. There's no doubting PSG looked dangerous, especially on the counter-attack at times. But United were in the game, and then injuries to Martial and Lingard prompted the introduction of Mata and Sanchez. And I was saying it to Kenny yesterday at the time, and the more I watched that second half, the more I really thought it was the case. I'd be interested to see what Solskjaer thinks if you ever got him at a very honest moment, but Lukaku was sitting there, put him on through the middle and put Rashford out wide just to keep some pace out wide. Like, the pace on the wings has been almost the identity of what Solskjaer has done, you know, and Mata has a lot of things, and he did get on the ball, he did create things, but he doesn't have that kind of pace, and it was noticeable that Di Maria did scamper down that touchline for the second goal. And then Sanchez is just so desperately out of form. That I don't know. I think if he had those substitutions again, he might look at Lukaku through the middle and Rashford out in the touchline. Not least because there's a bit of continuity there, as in they've done that a few times under Solskjaer over the last few games. Rashford's used to being out wide and Lukaku through the middle at times, whereas suddenly you had Sanchez and Mata and Rashford. I don't know if those three have played together. Certainly not in a big game.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, we spoke about it a bit the other day, and I mean, I will clarify, I was sort of out and about actually listening to you on the radio talking about this game, okay. So I sort of didn't see all of it. But, you know, I was actually looking forward to the situation where, you know, it had a reasonable result going away, and then using some of that pace that you mentioned in that scenario, that second leg situation that almost we expect Spurs might be in. Like, how do you play? Yeah. But it's almost as though when the focus was at home, and it was about taking control of the tie at home, that they were just found out that small bit, you know? And it's one of those ones where you actually would have felt a nil-all, if it finished nil-all, would have been a perfectly good result.
Well,
with some of the attributes that they have, some of the skills that they have.
It's interesting you mentioned about taking control, because I'll play a clip of Arsene Wenger in a moment. I was listening to, he was on BeIN Sports. But Solskjaer did his press conference, and he was talking here about potentially what went wrong, Ollie.
It was an even game, and it's always going to be difficult against good teams. And first half was even Steven, if you like. First goal is always going to be important, and the way we conceded it was a bit disappointing. Set piece, we shouldn't concede a goal at set piece, but we did. The second goal, that was quality by them. There was, you know, the ground he makes up, that boy, to get in the box is for some, all the strikers that want to be out there, poachers, that's how to get in the box and get those 5-6 extra goals that I've been talking about, that way our strikers should try to get.
People say it's a reality check for you. Is that right? Is that fair?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you can say that, because that's the level we want to get to. We've been talking about top four. Top four is one thing, but we want to be at the top, and Man United should be at the top, and this is a top team that we played against. So, and our players today, disappointed after the game, of course, but I also think they know that we need to step up our level to get to the level we want to get to.
What's your message to players afterwards?
Don't feel sorry for yourself. This is something you got to learn from. It's just level up from what we're used to. They were experienced. They bought some fouls. Things like this, that's just part of their learning as players, because we're young. Many of our players are very young. First time Jesse and Marcus will play a proper Champions League game at Old Trafford. So learn from that. So that's, you can't feel sorry for yourself. Look forward. We've got Chelsea, Liverpool the next two games. So there's whoever feels sorry for themselves, they will not play probably against Chelsea.
What can you do about Alexis Sanchez? I mean, he just seems right off it at the moment.
Well, I'm not the one to do that. I can't do anything about Alexis Sanchez. For he needs to, when he plays, he needs to find himself, because we know there's a quality player there.
Solskjaer speaking there. It seems nobody can do much for Sanchez at the moment. We'll come back to that in a second. So Arsene Wenger, who you would imagine would be a good pundit, wouldn't you? Thoughtful.
Yeah.
Analytical.
Well, he's been a long-term pundit in France. Remember, he was a pundit at the Henri handball, I think, from what I recall.
And before, I think. You'd
see him in the press box, sort of.
Back to France 98 territory.
Oh, yeah. So he's a staple there.
Yeah, so his French television stuff. And when we were at the Euros in 2016, you would see him on the TV there as well. But I guess post Arsenal departure, he's been able to do a bit more than he might usually do. So he's popping up in various places. He was on beIN Sports on their Arabic channel, but speaking English. You know, I don't know how the being thing works, but they have.
It's all over the shop. Miami
everybody.
And
yeah,
and, yeah.
So Wenger was talking about this game, and it's just interesting to get his take on it. And he was talking about Manchester United losing this game ultimately in midfield. Have a listen.
In the Champions League, is an important thing, is that you cannot be dominated in midfield. And the whole evening, Man United was dominated in midfield. Paris Saint-Germain played with five midfielders and they never lost the ball. Manchester United could never win the ball back, and when they had the ball, they lost it very quickly because Paris Saint-Germain dominated the midfield to win the ball back. And they lost the battle there in midfield. And that's when you play at home and you cannot keep the ball, you're always in trouble. And that's what happened today. Man United looked very poor in midfield compared to the class of Paris Saint-Germain. And basically, it was a little advantage for Paris Saint-Germain to play with five midfielders tonight and with less offensive players.
Mm. A few people have made that argument as well, that not having Neymar on the team for that game in particular was a blessing.
Yeah, I can. You can see the argument behind it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, at Wembley, Vertonghen has just put Spurs 2-0 up.
He's just bounded forward.
Ghosted in at the back post. He's playing left wing back, yeah. So he put the cross in for Son's volley, and now he's volleyed home. Cross came in from the right. It's a brilliant volley. I mean, he's taking this fantastically well, Vertonghen.
Interesting 24 hours for Pochettino, really, isn't it? In the context of everything.
I'll admit things have swung back in this direction.
Oh, look at you now. Look at you now. The Joe Amateur is singing back towards... Who won their most recent game?
I would still give it to Solskjaer under the circumstances.
You're fading a small bit. You want me to give it to Scholesi now? Oldham won the other night. How long before he brings it in? Knows the club.
Never.
No, never?
Never Scholesi.
You'd never give it to
him? Don't trust him. Not a good enough communicator.
Oh, you don't trust him?
No. Not the way
this
I do.
This is Joe's hot take.
Yeah, no, Solskjaer for me feels right. Paul Scholes does not feel right. I thought for all his hard-hitting analysis... And it was very entertaining, especially Mourinho. It didn't get much beyond, go and express ourselves and play football. Attack. We're United. We attack. Did you ever see Paul Scholes analyse a game and pick it apart or say something that made you think, oh, that's really interesting?
No, I take your point on that. Without having probably watched enough of his analysis.
Well,
I like some of his honesty at times.
The honesty was fantastic.
Yeah.
But I mean...
No, I see your, your argument.
There is a difference between commentating and analysing something after it's happened and then the ability to coach and pick it apart and pick out solutions.
But Gary Neville is a brilliant analyst in that regard.
Well, I still think Gary Neville would make a fine manager one day.
He'd be too busy being chairman.
Well, potentially. The Valencia thing was a bit of a mess and he went into a toxic situation and it blew up in his face. And there were a million reasons why that went wrong. I would still... If you said to me, would you give Gary Neville the job... Eventually, one day, if he did a few things...
You would?
Well, yes. But Scholes...
You're sticking with your man now, sort of.
I'm not sticking with him. I'm giving it
not
to
Not responding to his messages straight away.
No.
I've
already texted him and said, Ollie...
You're not opening the WhatsApp. You're not letting it go to the two blue ticks. You're just waiting. Keep them hanging.
Two blue ticks and a response saying, Ollie...
Still got you.
This changes nothing. So look, Spurs 2-0. Meanwhile, Ajax have equalised against Real Madrid, which is big news from Amsterdam. So it's 1-1 between Ajax and Real Madrid. Spurs 2, Borussia Dortmund 0. Just one last thing on United I want to bring you, if that is OK. Andy Mitten was on OTBAM this morning and we heard a question there about Sanchez. So Mitten was saying, have a listen. I'm not sure Sanchez is the best personality. I'm not sure how popular he was at Arsenal and now it seems to be the same at United. Before I go to that though, Dan...
3-0.
Pochettino, though.
Delete your previous WhatsApp message. How long have you got?
87 minutes. Yeah. Spurs 3, Dortmund 0. Dortmund have gone to pieces. I'm seeing the celebration. I haven't seen the goal yet. This is quite the turnaround. Dortmund had the better of it in the first half, the better chances. Sancho, if you're just tuning in, I mentioned earlier on, was creating bits and bobs. And now it's Spurs 3-0.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty dramatic...
It's either for Vertonghen again or Son.
No, is it Llorente? I think it might be Llorente. Because Llorente has come off the bench.
It's Llorente.
I was just checking because it was 18.
We're seeing here, it's a corner.
Yeah.
And it's flicked on by Llorente.
Yeah, he replaced Lucas Moura pretty much a minute ago.
Right.
85th minute introduction.
Wow.
And yeah, corner kick, almost his first touch. And he sticks it away, 3-0.
Okay, there you go, Spurs. Wow. So yeah, look, Andy Mitten here on Alexis Sanchez and what's going wrong at United.
I met him for the first time in 2011 when he joined Barcelona. I met him on the day that he signed because I was at the training ground to interview Iniesta. And I knew at the time that United wanted him. And I also knew that his second choice was United and City was his third choice. But he went to Barca, you can't blame him for that. And he was a good player at Barca. He had a very simple job, which was get the ball to Lionel Messi. If you have to beat a man and do that. And he was an honest player. He trained very well, he worked very hard, and he's still doing that at Manchester United, but it's just not coming off for him. And he does look to be a player who is in decline. And it's frustrating to see. And sometimes players just don't work out at a club. Angel Di Maria is a perfect example. But Di Maria down tools by the February, by the March of his first season. He wasn't happy. His personal circumstances were not great. Sanchez, well, I mean, he's split from his long-term partner. That's not been ideal for him either. And he's not hugely popular in the dressing room. But he's working really hard. He really is professional. I do still think there's life left in that footballer. But whether we're going to see it at Manchester United, the more this goes on, the more the poor form goes on, the more I doubt it.
Andy, what odds do you put it out at this point that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will be the manager over the summer and into next year?
If you really pushed me and said, will he be manager, yes or no, I'd say yes. But the decision has not been made yet, and it doesn't need to be made yet. And if he loses against Chelsea and then against Liverpool, the doubts will really surface and people will say, well, where's his experience? But if I'm judging him after the 12 games so far with 10 wins, 1 draw and 1 defeat, he's done exceptionally well. He's hugely popular. He's lifted the mood around the club incredibly, not just among the players and the fans, but among the staff as well. He has been a ray of light after the misery of Jose Mourinho, and I'd love him to become Manchester United manager. But he'll be judged by results. If United get beat 5-0 in Paris and get beat at home to Liverpool and get knocked out the FA Cup, his bank credit will take some massive knocks, just as Jose Mourinho started a year ago. When Mourinho went into that Sevilla game, fans were happy with him. They were happy that he'd signed a new contract extension. And when he lost that with a really poor performance in both legs from United, that's when the doubt started. So what United need is a plan. They're looking for a director of football. They're going to appoint a director of football. That's all happening separately from whoever the next manager is going to be. And I'd love to think that the club has got a longer-term plan to use the vast resources that they've got, because they've not been using them to the best of their ability in recent years. United have been massively underperforming.
So just, it was interesting there, you did reference the fact that Sanchez is training very hard, but he's not popular in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was overly popular at the end of his time at Arsenal either. There was much hand-waving on the pitch and washing of hands, I think, publicly, and saying, I'm trying so hard, look at this mob. And often he would go and do the eye-catching pressing on his own. You know, you press a goalkeeper as if to say, look at me. And it never looked part of a plan. I think he was just actually demonstrating which he wanted and how hard he was working. And I think the Arsenal players resented that as time went on.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that sort of posturing always will cause you difficulty. I know there was some more sympathetic stuff written recently about how he'd struggled to settle in the area. I think he had a breakup, a high profile breakup.
Yeah, Andy Mitten mentioned that.
Yeah, you know, and all those issues. I always thought with Sanchez there was a danger that he was just a bit burnt out because he played so much football.
Definitely a possibility.
Through, you know, those international commitments with Chile through the summers and stuff. But I think that looks to be a simplistic explanation now, to be honest. And there seems to be more personality driven angle to it as well as like any physical driven aspect to it. I mean, if you're mentioning that he's training well, it's different to a story of a guy who's gone. You know, you often hear people, you know, talking about someone's legs being gone or they're not moving in the same way before, and it does seem to be more unhappiness rather than sort of a rapid deterioration. You know, it wouldn't shock me if he went somewhere else and started sort of performing in a different setup. I mean, sometimes you just got off in the wrong foot at a place and you can never get back from that.
It's very hard to know with Sanchez. I think there is a possibility he has gone a little bit, actually.
Yeah, that's possibly true. I mean, that would be my initial feeling.
Yeah.
That he's not the player he was.
Yeah, that's my sense. I'd be surprised if he goes somewhere else and lights it up. So he's basically been playing since the age of 16. There's the travel over to South America all the time, and Chile were obviously involved in quite a number of summers, and you couple that with the fact that he was to his credit, like, obsessive about playing every game. Mm. Like, refused to take a rest, and in those games then would run more than everybody else, and he was top of all these charts for about 4 or 5 years running. I think all of that combined takes a bit of a toll.
Of course. I mean, it's natural that it would take its toll, but again, you are listening to people who have a sort of good insight into what is going on in the camp. So if you're not happy or not liked or whatever the scenario might be, that's going to make it worse, make you more lethargic in some ways.
No, it's true. Asensio has scored for Real Madrid. So it went 1-0 courtesy of Benzema. Ajax equalised, and now in the 87th minute, Marco Asensio has put Real Madrid back 2-1 up. And meanwhile at Wembley, couldn't really have gone better for Spurs. They're into added time and it's 3-0.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back. So it's gone full time at Wembley, Dan. Finished 3-0 to Spurs.
Looking pretty good.
Meanwhile, Dan is bang on about Son being in the top five. Hazard, he says, Chelsea aren't even in the top four. Son is keeping Spurs in a title race they shouldn't be in.
I think,
it should be noted, the texter wished to remain anonymous. Who was it?
Don't know who it was.
Okay.
My parents are out tonight.
Name your top five Premier League players. Well, in no particular order.
Okay, but in this season just gone, he's been in the top five performing, definitely.
Okay, name your top five performing Premier League players this season.
This season?
Yeah, go. In no particular order. Son.
In no particular order.
But you have Son in there, we know that.
In no particular order. Aguero.
Okay, I'll agree with you on that. Can I nudge you towards Van Dijk?
Virgil van Dijk, of course. Absolute certainty.
Is Salah in your top five?
I think there's sort of a consistency of delivery. See, I'd love to go... Like, De Bruyne, to me, is the best player in the Premier League.
We're talking this season,
as you said.
Okay, are you having Salah in on this season's form?
I think he's just about... I think he's done a fair bit. He's actually done a fair bit.
Okay, Salah's in there. Any other... Robertson, surely.
Is that a full back? I mean, Matt Doherty has been mentioned in places as well.
Is he in your top five performing?
I'm not so sure about that.
Robertson isn't.
In the top five this season?
If we're talking underrated, Robertson.
Okay, this is one of these scenarios where you're asking me, but you're telling me yours as we go along.
Why am I even here for this? I don't want you to give your top five.
I'll just walk out if you want.
And for it to be lambasted and you to go, I forgot about Robertson. You're allowed to discount Robertson.
Yeah, there's no one from Arsenal that I'm putting into that list. I'm trying to think, you know.
Anyone from Chelsea?
I mean, Sterling has been good at times this year.
He plays for Man City.
I know that. Yes, I'm aware of this.
Sorry, Sterling... Is Sterling not in your top five?
I think Sterling would be one, yeah. That's what I was saying, yeah. This season, on the basis of this season, I think Sterling would probably be in there. Yeah. He's been better than Sané, he's been better than Mahrez, he's been better than, you know, Silva and De Bruyne have been out at times, particularly De Bruyne.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Sterling's been amazing.
I think Sterling probably would have to be in the
Fernandinho?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So one, two, three, four. What? I don't understand.
Fernandinho's very important. I bump him in ahead of... But I'm not. Fernandinho's ahead of Robertson.
Okay, but where were we? How many do we have? We had Son, we had Van Dijk.
Yeah, we've got Aguero.
We had Aguero.
We had Salah. Bias, scored we had Salah. Weekend.
We had Salah.
And we have Sterling. Would I bump out Salah and stick in Fernandinho? I mean, maybe Salah on the basis of this season alone. I don't know.
Okay, go on.
I mean, this is just wonderfully, like, I reserve my right to change my opinion at any time.
Now, that's fine.
You can't have three Man City players in there. You have to have Salah in there probably in...
But then you're running out. So
Sterling goes to six.
No, that's not.
Call him at six.
Sterling's been wearing Son.
It's the five aside. Take your bib, stand to the side. We'll bring you in shortly.
Didn't take long to deconstruct your hot take.
Yeah, it wasn't a hot take. Everything's a hot take. Every opinion is a hot take.
Lukewarm take.
it was mild. A mild.
So we finished up at Wembley 3-0 Spurs, and it's just finished up. In Amsterdam, 2-1 to Real Madrid away to Ajax. So that's a good result for Real Madrid. Final thoughts, Dan. We're pretty much done. We'll park Declan Rice for...
Tomorrow, we move on.
From tomorrow onwards.
I mean, Kenny's sentiments there were accurate enough. We just have to deal with what we have and hope that the next Irish superstar to play in the Premier League is actually Irish.
Okay. Tomorrow morning, OTBM is pretty stellar. They will have Kieran Donaghy on the show. Also, coming live from Christchurch, they will have Ronan O'Gara discussing what's next for Ireland after the win in Murrayfield. And then here tomorrow, John Giles will be in, as will Kevin Kilbane. Tom Dunn on the way. Good luck.
ball when he's out of grass. He'll give you a move with a perfect pass. Give him a ball when he's out of space. He'll give you a move with godly grace. Ra-ta-ta.